Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 421 of the JV Club with my colleague at Maximum Fun Network, Drea Clark. She is currently the host of the untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo project. It is terrific. I love their perspectives on film. I do enjoy nerding out on movies, and I did enjoy nerding out on Drea. It's a great episode. I hope you enjoy it. It's been a really fun way to sort of button the Max Fun Drive joyfulness that we experienced the last couple of weeks. I want to thank everybody who upgraded, boosted, became a new member. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for your support, not just of my podcast, but of the rest of the podcasts on the network and the wonderful people working at Max Fun HQ. You can always become a member. Rest assured, I believe I said something about that in this week's episode. If you feel like you want to be a member, but you're just so crushed that you can't get a JV Club pin, I want to let you know I do feel like I'm going to buy some additional ones and keep them to send as gifts. So if you want one and you didn't get a chance to get one, you can show me you became a $10 a month member. I'm going to get a pin to you, okay? Enjoy this episode, and I'll talk to you next week. Okay, so you were just telling me that you made your first real venture out of town recently, very recently. You just got back yesterday. And I am so interested to hear, especially because you did drive up there, how it felt to sort of, because I also did a recent, much shorter little mini road trip. And it really, I went to Santa Barbara for one night, and I was like, this is the most exotic place I've ever been
truly.
In my life. Like, everything
truly.
Seemed so fresh.
Well, and for me, it felt even more of a big deal. So, not to brag, but I live by myself. And
here we go.
Oh, yeah. So,
here we go.
I have not, and also because I was relatively high risk, I have not been in a store in over a year. Yeah. I've had my groceries delivered, I've been adhering to a lot of things. My friends are like, again, not to brag, one of my best friends has lupus. Like, we've just been all very, like, in our caves, but, like,
yeah.
10 miles from each other, but only over Zoom contacting. So I haven't been inside with another person for, like, 14-some months or hugged anyone or anything. And so my parents are both vaccinated, and they had retired to Northern California. I'm based in L.A., and I'm vaccinated, and I literally was, like, countdown clock for the like vax cooking in 2 week process.
And then I
drove up to their place, and then it was so surreal. Just like, first off, if you've ever driven LA to Northern California, it's sort of the five. I just took the five.
Oh yeah,
but
I've done it many times because it's Sketchfest.
Oh, exactly.
It goes from like, some of it's like feels wildly interesting, and then it's just not for a really long time.
Well, I'm from the Midwest, so I've driven Minnesota, Nebraska, and back a million times, which is nothing but wildly uninteresting.
Uh-huh.
So the California one's still, it's still got that beat. But yeah, you have like some mountain terrain. You have these beautiful sort of rolling hills. And it was like, oh, the world, it's still out here.
Yes.
Like I was crawling out of a bunker or something. And then, so I was like, I kept counting down. Like I got a hug and I was like, first hug. And my mom and I went and got mani-pedis, and I was like, first nail salon. We went to a movie theater, and I took them to see Nomadland.
Ooh, you really did. Listen,
no,
you just dipped. You didn't dip. You went in the pool,
yeah,
baby.
I was like,
you went in the pool.
Yeah. I'm back, baby. I did a whole Jack Nicholson. I don't even know what that was, but
you did an anti bucket list. You did a I'm not going to die,
yes.
And I'm going to do maybe some simpler things.
The most
you can inane think
bucket list.
That's
a,
right.
a simpleton's bucket list, but yes.
That's right.
But it was my bucket list. So it was very funny, like I can't remember what something happened and my dad gave me a high five and it's like, my her first high five. Like everything counted. It's like, yes.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I think there's something, I mean, I feel like I'm sure conversations like this obviously are happening everywhere. Hopefully, instead of being, you know, a snore, it's much more a sense of community and this feeling of, again, these things that so many of us can all relate to, whatever our circumstances have been or whatever else makes us different. But I'm almost envious because I didn't shelter in place to that extreme. Mm. There's a really quiet, out of the way grocery store near my physical therapist where I did not go for a very long time until we all felt like I could go with a mask on. But so I have had these ventures out into, even if it's just doctor's appointments and grocery stores, I've definitely and lots of just being outside and there's part of me that kind of envies the extreme to really everything, like my first high five. Do you know what I mean? I'm sort of envious of that feeling of crawling out of the bunker at the end of a movie, you know, because I didn't quite have that, which is such a weird.
But I know what you mean. I think it's because it feels regardless. It feels dramatic regardless how anyone went through. And I think the next 2 years of small talk are going to center around how each of our pandemic experiences were just a little different or a lot different than the people around us. So even for me and my other shut-in friends, how we experienced it was different because of how much work we had, or I've strangely had what I felt like a lot of social engagement, even if it was from my bedroom.
Sure.
Ooh, a sentence that in the before times would have been much more exciting. All this bedroom social
now
engagement.
Now everyone knows what you mean. And it's like, zoom it up.
Yeah, no, that's just where I zoom from. But because I have our podcast and I was like, oh, we had guests. So I got to meet a new person each week. And the sort of regular viewing things. But it's also, I'm a producer and a festival programmer. I've worked from home for years. So I was sort of already set up for that. And I live in a city that it's very easy to get things delivered. And
yes, indeed.
So it was less a thing of me being I'm a nail biter and this is the, and just, oh no, I've always been a square.
I can do this.
I follow the rules and I'm able to.
Yeah.
I'm also, it was a big thing of realizing mentally how people process things differently. And I was very lucky to discover that I'm like, oh, I'm okay like this.
Right.
Like I had a lot of, you know, like I'm sure we all know so many people who are much more extroverted and, you know, that sort of get energy from other people. They were just wilting just from that side of it. So I had a very lucky ride. So it sounds like this, again, it sounds very dramatic of, I'm like, I could count on one hand how many times I made eye contact the last year. But I still also, I made it. I was not in a rough space. I was guilty a lot for how much harder other people were having it.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, you managed to find a way to beat yourself up for being too
okay. Well, I think I mentioned I'm originally from the Midwest. So, I did find a way to find some guilt in that.
It would also work if you were Canadian or Catholic or both. Or
truthfully, guilt has its roots in so many beautiful traditions.
That's right. It's
across
right.
the globe.
What a beautiful, beautiful ancient ritual of self-flagellation.
Exactly. This has actually come up because I was going to suggest an audiobook to you.
Yes. So you were driving up.
Yes.
And you were listening to a book that I need
I was
to take
listening to a book.
Of.
And so it is called The Other Bennett Sister. And it is by Janice Hadlow. And this is why I love. So I am a huge Jane Austen fan.
Yes, I have indeed.
Read all of the books numerous times. Persuasion is my favorite. But like many people, I have, of course, a huge soft spot for Pride and Prejudice.
Yes.
And seen every adaptation a million times. The Other Bennett Sister, it centers on, so it's the Pride and Prejudice family, the Bennets. And so you have your two older sisters, Jane and Elizabeth. Obviously, Lizzie is the mm-hmm. protagonist of Pride and Prejudice. And then the two younger sisters, Kitty and Lydia, the Flibbertigibbets. And then you have Mary in the middle, who's the sort of like pious, boring, staid, studious. So the other Bennet sister centers on Mary.
Mary? Oh, and it is cool.
So good.
I'm going to snap that. It would be a
great
read.
It would be a great listen. I loved it so much. It is beautifully written. The author is, she has the voice, the Austin's voice completely down. So it has the timing and the phrasing. But it's also, if you're familiar with her, with Jane Austen's other novels, there's little phrases that she circles in. I was like, oh, that's from Emma. Or like, there's like little things that she says that's part of the kind of like ethos of each book.
I mean, it sounds like you're saying Easter eggs.
Oh my God, it's Easter
eggs. Austin eggs. It's Austin eggs.
It is Austin eggs.
She hides some Austin eggs in there.
That is exact. Crack open those Austin eggs. They made me so happy. But it's also just such a nice, like, I love Pride and Prejudice, and I think so many people are like, yes, I relate to Elizabeth, I get it. Mary and how she gets to flourish in this, because it also extends beyond the end of where Pride and Prejudice is.
Yes.
Like, that's the first act of this book.
Yeah.
And so then you also get to revisit where Jane is, where Elizabeth is, like, where these characters that you love, where they go next, where Charlotte Lucas goes.
I loved it.
And it's a beautiful character arc. Like, there's more growth in Mary in this than there's growth in Elizabeth, if that makes sense.
So, it absolutely makes sense. It absolutely makes sense.
Yeah.
That is very exciting. I feel like I keep hearing a crying dog that I hope is just
That's the okay, neighbor's dog that I hear almost never. So it's really chosen a great time to pop up its cute little
fluffy
head.
That sounds like a lonely. Is it a lonely sound?
It is inside their home and they are not home. And it is rarely inside when they are not.
Yeah.
I've felt that dog. I hear you. I have felt that too.
Oh God. Yeah. Just the out and out mewling. Now, when did you discover Jane Austen? Did you have were you an avid reader as a younger person?
Such a reader. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
We actually, I think, cause I saw my parents this last week, and I feel once you hit a certain point of adulthood, a lot of the times when you're with your family again becomes exciting games of remember when. So my parents had some friends over. So, of course, it became, let's tell stories about Andrea. And one of them that came up, because I was such a reader and was always wanting to skip out on things. And we used to do like family driving trips every summer, like vacation style.
Oh yeah. From Minnesota.
From Minnesota.
Yeah. You mentioned the Midwest. Yeah. I couldn't remember if we'd honed in yet.
Oh yeah. And that means like we did like a trip to New England. We did the Black Hills in South Dakota. We did Yellowstone. And my parents were huge baseball fans. So we used to go to all these different stadiums. And at every single one, there's pictures of me reading. So I'm at Wrigley Field. What was I reading?
It's great.
Oh, exciting. Ramona Quimby H.A. You don't say. Like, it's truly. And I remember, I remember flying to Hawaii because my grandfather was a Pearl Harbor survivor. Okay. So we got to go to Hawaii a couple times for some Pearl Harbor reunion things. And I remember reading The Secret Garden on the plane, and it was like second or third grade. And I was so into it that we took off, we're going. I was literally so into it that at one point, like finally the flight attendant like tapped my shoulder to see if I wanted a drink. And I looked up and my ears popped because like my body hadn't even realized I was in flight because I was in this garden. Yeah.
That's a great story, though. I mean, listen, that's like everything you just said is like the biggest advertisement for, you know, the book board. I don't know. The milk board of supervisors. the book American Book Association.
Yes.
I'm not sure. Or maybe just the library. I don't know. What power. What immense power fiction can have. Yeah. And that's just amazing. And I totally get the being in a stadium. It's funny, too, because everything you describe, I mean, I can't speak to the baseball part because that's definitely, you know, I've been to a handful of baseball games and my dad is a baseball fan. And I understand it. And I always sort of wanted to watch it. Do you know what I mean? I always wanted, I was like, I want to.
Yes. That's how I feel about beer.
Yeah. Oh,
I would love to enjoy a cold beer. Beer is disgusting.
I want nothing more than be craving something I don't want right now, but I'm really craving the craving. Yes. And then it stops there. But just the places that you're describing, I feel like it's so easy to imagine being a kid or a teen and not having the enthusiasm that an adult has about many of the places that you've described. And I mean, some kids do. I don't mean to, like, you know, just make a cross the board statement, but I feel like when I think now about, especially of like some place with a lot of history or, but to a certain degree, maybe even a national park, although I sort of always love that stuff. It just seems like it just doesn't matter the same way for a lot of us when we're younger. Like, it just doesn't have the same, there's not the same feeling of like interest in history or wanting to having that quote unquote bucket list where you're like, I'm middle-aged and I really want to see this thing and I want my kids to see it. And that where that comes from, that drive inside where that comes from, feels like it's just something that comes with age for a lot of people.
Well,
and
because
you can't instill that necessarily as much as you might want to in someone else.
When you're young, like me sitting through Yellowstone and reading and sort of glancing up and being like, yes, very pretty, sure. You have such a sense of possibility all the time. Like, I'm sure I wasn't thinking about it, but in the back of my head, it was likely, I was like, yeah, I can probably come back here whenever I want to, it will always look like this or whatever. And on my parents' side of it, they had... like, my dad had not gone on a lot of vacations when he was young. And do you know, so for them, it was, oh, this is rarefied air. This is something for you to take in. And sort of then what we all realize now these many years later is, well, we got what we could and needed from those moments. And similar to the idea of getting out of the pandemic, like, you will never experience anything in the same way that someone else does.
Yes.
Whether it's sort of a longer thing like a pandemic or if it's a shorter vacation or just visiting something, there's certain it does mark it as special, those rare times that you do, though, that thing where you're standing and you're in a moment and you can see that you are clocking that you're in a moment, someone you are with is clocking, like,
absolutely,
those are like the, you know, the star points. Those are not
absolutely
that gives them the specialness.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting if, I wonder how it would have changed. I mean, if this is like a lot of ifs, but I wonder if it would have changed if you had been reading Into the Wild or like, ooh. I wonder if you had been reading something that placed you in that locale or even something approximating that locale, if it could have been more symbiotic somehow. If you
sure.
could. Because I feel like I enjoy I'll listen to, I'll get in the mood where I'll listen to like an okay noir that's set in LA, just because I feel like having the experience of being able to walk past the bar that they're talking about. You know, I'll go through these pockets where I'm like, ooh, I want to listen to something that involves Barbara Stanwyck's house because someone pointed it out to me and I can walk there and like I can get it all over me. I'll be immersed in it, you know, while I'm listening to it, or I'll read it and then I'll walk out and think about what I read. And so it enhances and kind of grows the experience outward instead of it being a situation where, you know, reading about the Secret Garden is reading about a private space in a spectacularly unique private space.
Right.
That's the whole
in
point
Yorkshire.
Of what it is in
yeah.
Yorkshire, that, you know, there's nothing about that needs you to be on a plane or that needs you, frankly, to even be in Hawaii. And so it's just interesting.
That's
to
a
think
fun
about.
Thing to think about for current parents, maybe to help, like, if they have readers, young readers themselves, to help curate their books, because that would be fun if I could tie back in. I guarantee I was probably reading like Agatha Christie or so, I read a lot of stuff set in England. I loved it. But
I hear
that,
you.
Right, that I was like in Yellowstone in this like beautiful testament to the wilderness and landscape of America. And I was like, cool, is there something in sort of Victorian London I can be immersed in? But the idea, yeah, I like that. If you are curating or helping sort of like nudge your kid, like there, I'm sure there's plenty of fun books set in Hawaii I could have been reading to tie in at that moment.
Or when your family takes you on a trip to Colorado, you should be reading The Shining. It's as simple as that.
And then book a room at the Overlook Hotel. Yes.
That's right. That's right. You will never sleep again. It's going to be great.
All work, no play. You're going to be fine. Yeah.
Were you, and that extends into high school as well. Was there other stuff that you were, obviously, I would assume that your love of film probably bloomed and blossomed at an early age in it's a difference. You know, everybody loves movies. There's a difference between sort of having the hunger to discuss and intellectualize or analyze and understand the craft as well as the story and just the escapism of it. Was that something that kind of manifested itself early for you?
Yeah, I think that for me, it's story in general. And I'm a fan of stories in multiple mediums. And like you just said, both for the escapism, for how they can denote moments in time, that there's entire sort of movies that I think, like I said, you know, I took my parents to see Nomadland, which I've seen several times now, and the idea of what that film will represent for this time and place in our lives, in history, and in all, like, there's something about that. So I, you know, like most people, loved watching movies when I was young, and was probably always being yelled out to go outside because I was either watching something or reading something. And then I don't remember having more affinity for that than other friends until I got to college and started sort of studying and working more. I went to the University of Wisconsin, which, you know, is just world renowned for its film department. People think film and they think Wisconsin, you know?
Is the University of Wisconsin in Madison?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never been to Madison, and I really want to go.
It's great. I love Madison.
Regular listeners may remember this, but I said yes to a Comic-Con type thing, specifically because they were like, and you'll fly into Madison.
Oh, okay, okay.
It wasn't in Madison.
Okay.
It was at a, and I'm sure you'll know exactly what it, well, maybe you won't because you're not from there, but it was like a indoor water park with it.
The Wisconsin Dells.
Yes, it was at the Wisconsin Dells.
So
I was like, this is not, while it was a very pleasant and fun adventure, I had understood myself to be like finally spending time in Madison because I feel I will love that little city. And I did not get to, I didn't see moment one of Madison.
No. Also, the difference between Madison and the Dells is very funny. So,
I know that to be true. But so I know it's not, it may not, I guess my point is it may not be renowned for its film department, but it is actually, you know, that, and it feels like Minnesota and Wisconsin are known for churning out a lot of very dry, funny, clever, sweet, witty artists.
I think,
you know?
So. And Prince. I mean,
and
I'm from Minnesota,
Prince.
So I have to make sure to bring him up.
Own it.
But
own it.
No, I don't say that to disparage the UW. Like, I had the best time in school there. And because, especially when I was there, because it was such a, like, DIY film side of things, there was a great just ability to explore and, like, hey, if you think you can make it happen, go ahead and shoot it, you know?
Uh-huh.
And
and
that was really fun. And we had, like, David Bordwell, whom many people who study film theory, he was one of my professors. And I still go to people's houses in L.A. And his book that he wrote with his wife, Kristen Thompson, is on people's shelves. And I'm like, well, I studied under Bordwell, you know? But awesome. I had an amazing time there. And I was, I triple majored in English.
Triple major.
Well, English comm arts and art history. And honestly, that is more a result of my producer brain than anything else, because I got, they were called the timetables, which is how they, you set your classes or whatever. And I basically just figured out how to like jerry rig my electives. So they would like, ooh, if I take this, it counts for both of these majors. Like it was very much more about like.
That is very spreadsheety. Oh, yeah. I'm impressed.
It was so spreadsheety. And I did all my friends. None of us went to a guidance counselor ever. I was like, what do you like? What can I set up there? Yeah, I was like a bookie with how people took their classes.
Well, like, then let me ask you this really quick, because I feel like, you know, I have going back to college dreams just often enough, which was to say maybe every few months. But I would say as many times, as much as I have dreams about being in a class and, you know, having to take a test I didn't study for, whatever, I also have dreams about picking my schedule.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, every once in a while I have a dream where I'm looking at like a timetable.
That's
and I'm like, okay, hilarious. Let's see. I think if I just do classes, it's always a situation like it when I was in San Francisco where I'm working part-time and going to school part-time, and it's always like, what classes can I got to jam out a bunch of classes on Tuesday and Thursday. And then the way in which it turns into an anxiety dream, as they all inevitably do when they're about school, is like, oh, I've given myself too many classes on Tuesday and Thursday. Like, I'm going to be so tired. How am I going to do this and work Monday, Wednesday, Friday? Like, there's a real scheduling. It's a scheduling nightmare.
Yeah.
It's an actual scheduling nightmare.
Which is funny because I had such comfort from how well I felt like I navigated that.
So
that
envious.
I was like, oh, I would never have a stress dream. That would be my happy place of, oh, yeah.
You have a dream that you're flying and doing your schedule for college.
Yes. I'm like, oh. And everyone else in my row, like, what do you like? Let me put together a schedule. That is very, I've never once had that dream because I do think of that as like,
I love it.
A very happy, but one of, so I also speaking, I had several jobs. I nannied all through, college. I worked at a summer camp for 7 years. So every summer I went back and worked at my camp, which I adored. And then
yeah, I'm also envious of that. That sort of,
oh, you would be a great camp counselor.
You know what? You're right.
Yeah.
I'm going to own that. I'm going to say of
really
all the things
would.
I don't know if I would be good at, I would have been a great camp counselor.
I still to this day, and again, I worked there for 7 years, so it made its imprint. Like my personality, I give across a very camp counselor vibe, so fair enough. But I still, how I, like my biggest metric for people is, do I think they would be a good camp counselor?
I love that.
Yeah. And you would be a fantastic one. Yeah.
You say the majority of people you've met through Max Fun would make good camp counselors?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I would happily put together a camp just out of Max Fun people. Are you? That's the,
I guess that's Max Fun Con in a way.
It truly is. It truly. But that's the baseline. Like that's the energy, right? It's this.
Yeah.
It's this. It's a high energy, but a high responsibility. Like, it's a good. Like, yeah, we're sweet nerdy dorks. Like that's our thing. But
that's great.
Yeah, but the camp thing. Wait, why did I bring that? Oh, I was just talking jobs in general, but. And then I nannied for the same family all through school. So I did have to plan around the nights because I had them every night.
Yeah.
And then.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And then I worked. But so on the film side of things, I knew I'd get back on the right thread. On the film side of things.
There's no such thing as a right thread on this podcast. Do not worry at all.
By right thread, it's more, am I going to think of this later and been like, ooh, I meant to finish that point. but I got a job at our at the Union Theater, and I worked in the little art house Union Theater. Oh, and
that's a dream.
I helped pick some of the movies, and I didn't realize
that's
that was
so
programming,
cool.
But it was.
Yeah, absolutely,
and
it was.
Yeah, and it was. I sat in this little booth, and Madison's huge. We had like 40,000 students when I lived there, and still, every single time, someone would come through and be like, are you like, because of course I was the kid that would like talk in the 200 person lecture. I would raise my hand and when he called on people, because I obviously like the sound of my own voice. But so people would come and buy a ticket and be like, are you the girl in my English class? And I was like, probably. Like, that sounds like me. But I worked there for so long, and we had like the director, I remember, of this film called Mary Jane's Not a Virgin Anymore, came through and write. And she was like this young female director. It was kind of how I learned about independent film. And but yeah, I found myself just as immersed in those movies, like that if, again, a flight attendant had tapped on my shoulder, my ears would probably pop. Like,
right.
That was kind of my thing. I loved it.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun. Well, friends, I have made no secret about the fact that I am a huge advocate for mental health and what good therapy can do. So I am so thrilled, as always, to be sponsored by BetterHelp. But Janet, while I'm all about the idea of therapy, I just don't want to leave my home. That's okay! BetterHelp is customized online therapy, so you can do video, phone, you can even do live chat sessions, and they will help you find that perfect therapist in under 48 hours. And if you don't feel like it's a perfect fit, then they're going to let you change therapists and find you that perfect person, because I will tell you, that makes an enormous difference. Shout out to my own therapist. Now, you don't need trauma to benefit from therapy. I cannot emphasize that enough. It could be as simple as you're feeling a little anxious or depressed. For me, stress, always an issue. I will never run out of stress to talk about. So having that extra person, having those tools really helps life just be a little bit easier. I'm so grateful that I was turned on to therapy early, but it's never too late to start. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and the JV Club listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/JV Club. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/JV Club.
We have wasted this world. Our magic put a storm in the sky that has rendered the surface of our planet uninhabitable. But beneath the surface, well, that's another story entirely. In a city built leagues below the apocalypse, survivors of the storm forge paths through a strange new world. Some seek salvation for their homeland above. Others seek to chart the vast undersea expanse outside the city's walls. And others still seek, what else? Fortune and glory. Dive into the Aether Sea, the latest campaign from the Adventure Zone, every other Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And that was college.
That was college.
Did you have jobs in high school as well?
Oh yeah, in high school. Well, I started working at camp between my sophomore and junior year, so I never had like a summer bumming around really.
Right.
Like,
what was the age of the kids that you would had, and was it a camp that you had gone to and then became a counselor for?
And that's
So by the time you finished being at that camp, it was like that really was like going home. You would go home for the summer.
Yes.
You'd go to your second home for the summer.
It was YMCA Camp St. Croix in Hudson, Wisconsin. And I started going there when I was 8 or 9, and I loved camps. I would go to like 3 or 4 camps a summer because ours were only like 1 or 2 weeks long.
Okay, yeah.
And then when I was 16, between my sophomore year, I went and did the LDP, which was Leadership Development Program, but it's basically their CIT thing.
Mm-hmm,
so it was at the very beginning of the summer, and because I was sailing specific, and so I went for 3 weeks and then got home. And when we finished, like they had just finished the first session of camp. And I got hired the day I got home because largely I knew how to sail. And so they needed a sailing counselor. So
kind of awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know how many of my friends know how to sail. It's not many.
Well, and I know
I can count them on one hand if I'm thinking about it. You know, you might be my next.
Okay.
My thumb. You might be the thumb of my right hand.
Keep me in there because like zombie style, I'm absolutely going to commandeer a boat in the marina and get out of here. Yeah.
100%.
No, for sure. And so I was a counselor for 5 years. And then actually my last 2 years, I was the sailing director. But I learned how to sail at that camp. It's not like my family didn't have a boat or anything. So, I was 16, hired to be a sailing counselor, essentially. And some of my first campers were 14.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
I never told them how old I was, but like I literally could have gone to school with these girls.
Uh-huh.
And I was responsible for their lives. I had a co-counselor. But like we went on trail in keel boats for like 5 days. I was responsible for the lives of it's.
Oh, wow.
And I had no problem with it. I was like, yeah, no worries. Like the blasé nature that I look back now of the level of responsibilities I had is like absurd.
It would have had to be that blasé to even do to have done it. At
yeah.
All.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I learned how to, you had to, if you've. You've not, because you just said you don't sail, but, like, yeah. I had to learn how to anchor, like, to put down moorings on the boat. Like, I remember the sailing director at the time coming over to our cabin the night before we went on trail at, like, midnight and just sort of, like, sketching out to me. He's like, okay, so you're going to drop one anchor and then you turn the boat around into the wind and then let it, and then drop the second anchor. Like, I had never done it, and I was like, yeah, no problem. Like, I just had this, like, $80,000 boat. Five teenagers, like all this stuff. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, okay. Sure,
that's
I got it.
Awesome.
Like you drew it on this piece of paper. Obviously, I got it. Like,
oh,
insane.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
That's like a superhero to me.
Oh, it's sort of like teenage nonsense of like how infallible you are. Like,
yeah, yeah, 100%. Are you an only child or do you have siblings?
I'm not. I have a younger brother. Who's 2 years younger than me. And then I have an older sister and it's the most exciting family story we have. My parents had my sister in college and then gave her up for adoption. And so she was raised by a whole other family and no one ever knew about my sister because my mom had like Lutheran Family Services had sent her to live and like nanny for a family, but she had a post office box set up like she had an internship somewhere. So it was like this whole subterfuge and no one else in their family ever knew other than my mom's parents and like all the, it was and they broke up. It was a whole thing. And then so when my sister found us when she was 20, that's when I never knew about her. My brother, like no one knew. So it was this boom. And it's the best story ever because we're all family now. Like my parents went to her wedding and our grandparents to her kids and like we all vacationed together and it's such a good adoption story. And like my sister is this wonderful family with great parents and she has a sister and two brothers and it's really sort of worked out as dreamy as possible.
Okay, and so it is your parents' kid. It was
both
it was
of
just
them.
A young
yes.
thing. Yeah. That is very special. That is very
yeah,
special.
They were sophomores in college and they're from
That's
Nebraska.
So
they're both first in their family to go to college and didn't want to get
That's
married
so
for that sort of thing. So they actually had broken up and then eventually ended up back to each other, which also made me kind of have like I have wonderful had wonderful grandparents anyway, but made me even softer towards them. The idea of how they welcomed my dad back in because they had obviously really wanted them to get married and raise my sister. And but because it was closed adoption and Nebraska is not the biggest place, I have a bunch of male cousins around my sister's age and none of the family knew. And my mom said she was like always worried at Christmas that they would bring home someone that looked a little too much like me. Like,
right.
Because, like,
yeah,
it could have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when my sister found us, we discovered, like, we had literally driven by her family's farm every year on our way home to Nebraska for Christmas and stuff. Like, just bonkers.
That perspective shift is so crazy when suddenly a place has a very, very deep meaning that it never had before.
Oh,
and yet it's this thing that you've seen a million times. Like those are really extraordinary, noteworthy moments in life when you have that like, but I used to pass that. Oh, my God. This is so. Yeah. It's.
Oh, yeah.
That's really crazy.
And then,
also, side note, I don't want to gloss over.
No.
Couldn't be less surprised that you said it was Lutheran services. I mean, we are talking about the North. I was like, you might as well have said, and Garrison Keillor came to our house and picked up my sister and took her away to a wonderful family.
Absolutely.
The Lutheran,
absolutely.
Oh, my God.
But that part of it's always been a trip for me that, so my mom had always wanted to live in Minnesota. And that's where they set up a P.O. box for her in St. Paul. And so literally her friends were writing her thinking she was doing an internship. And she's actually like pregnant in Omaha with a family. And then,
And then this sounds like a Jane Austen book.
It sounds
like an American Jane Austen book. Like, she goes away to have the baby. Like, that feels, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh. I've always been furious at my family that we didn't get to meet on Oprah or something because, like...
And this is before DNA test. Like, nowadays, you know, I mean, I have a friend who absolutely found out he has a half-brother and is, like, sort of trying to navigate what that looks like. It's because of DNA and the fact that all of that became so much more commercialized and marketable and like, consumable. The time in which you have none of that and someone finds you and you didn't even know, like you said, it's not like you knew she was out there somewhere, that all the information dropped at once.
Although you might be surprised or maybe not, like, and I've known my sister now much longer than I didn't know about her. So I'm used to it. But when this all happened, the amount of people when they heard the story were like, oh yeah, I found out I had a half sibling I never knew about, or
so it's more common than I might think.
To me it was. And it's also really interesting being on the other side of an adoption story. Like, whenever I say, oh, my sister was adopted, obviously the inference is that we adopted her. And when I'm like, oh no, my parents are her biological parents.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, because
I bet that is so different.
It's such a funny thing. And it's also like, my sister's brothers are adopted and are not interested in finding their birth mother. And there's, you know, it's like, it's such a personal story. Mm-hmm. And there's so many, like, it's really hard to put yourself out there in any kind of emotional thing of, like, the vulnerability. Like, you could have a random crush and not want to share it.
Yes.
The idea of reaching out to someone as, like, that seeming with the impact of, like, your biological mother or something and not knowing.
Talk about don't meet your heroes. It's like there's a level of sort of, there is too much that could be not okay about this for me emotionally.
Yes.
Do I want to? Is it
hard? Yeah. And I really I'm impressed by my sister with that. Like, she, because there's all these things they had to navigate. Like, when she turned 18, she could get their name, but only if they had released it. But they had decided not to release it till she was 21. And so she thought that just meant they didn't want to find her. And then she'd gotten a PI and all this. And anyway, so I give her a lot of credit for reaching out and for taking that step. And, like, on our side, it was sort of as welcome as possible, but it's a tricky one for people.
And she did hire a PI? Because we all think that, you know, we imagine this person who's sort of leaning out from behind a pine tree, sort of looking at you and taking notes in a notebook with pencil and notebook, like, kind of does look like it could be mom. Like,
it was definitely Harriet the Spy. That's who she hired. Yep. And she definitely had a notebook. No, she hired a random, it was before she was getting married, and she really was thinking of, like, having kids in the next few years. Like, she's thinking of this future she was building and was like, all right, if I'm going to find out medical stuff, I'm going to do this. This is the time. And my sister's a pretty fearless person. And so, yeah, she found someone. And the other good part of it with that is similar to the Hollywood side of things. It's like having an agent. So, like, to get good or bad news, like, she had a filter in. So it was the PI who reached out. Yeah, it was the PI who reached out, who found my mom, reached out, was like, hey, is this your name? And did you have a baby on this day? And my mom was like, it is, and I did. And then, so the PI didn't know that my parents had were together and had, so she, that was like an extra step of, oh, and she has two full biological siblings. But then also the PI got to be a conduit of, well, she would like to connect with you if you're comfortable with it and blah, blah, blah. So they set that up. So
which
it was,
is like a different level of, that's a different type of skill potentially than, you know, information gathering or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
To be able to also shepherd a reunion is, you know.
Harriet had to hand that over. She had to, that's a different skill set. Yeah.
It's a decidedly different skill set, in particular from Harriet the Spy.
Yes, exactly.
In particular. When you were in high school, was your interest in film, had you already started leaning in any particular direction, or were you just kind of a movie lover?
I was a general movie lover, but I responded more to classics than a lot of other people. And then I also had I had a deep love of really weird B cinema, like trauma films.
Yeah.
That I was not fine. Like, we weren't talking about that. Like, I knew inherently my friends were not interested in those things. So yeah. It was more. And I was in high school pre-internet. Right. I mean, I'm ageless, Janet. I'm forever young. But
I am also all
yeah,
those
you
things.
Get it. You get it. But it might have been pre-internet. And so I wonder how different it would have been if I'd found online communities with those. Because until I got to college, I was like, oh, I have weird taste.
Right. How did you find it? What led you into that realm in the first place?
Like TBS. Like whatever.
Okay.
And that's why. And that's someone like as someone who's gotten into the curatorial side of things, a lot comes from that. Like those like TV stations or and now it's even streaming services have like those picks or they'll do sort of thematic bundlings of things. And they do legwork. And for me, it was looking at things like either what was on TCM or TBS. And they were not things that I was ever going to go to our video rental store, which was like, you know, 5 feet by 8 feet, was not going to have those things. So like stumbling on them and then sitting and watching through every commercial, like that unlocked a lot of new kinds of like the breadth of film, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think I've always had relatively populist taste, but when I certainly the festival, I worked at Slam Dance for years and I ended up being the executive director there for a few years. And I ran the feature programming for like 13 years.
That's
and
awesome.
Our whole concentration at Slam Dance is first time filmmakers.
Yeah.
And so that was my kind of introduction to programming. And it's still one of my like favorite parts about it. Like the idea of finding new talent that has a completely new perspective on stories and is telling stories no one else is or in a way that no one else is. And that's still my like wheelhouse.
Yeah.
It's my wheelhouse. Yeah.
So it makes sense that you would, I mean, not that it was her first film, but Nomadland and that.
Oh, and I love Songs Our Brothers Taught Me, her first film, Chloe Zhao's first film.
Yeah.
And as well as The Rider, which is her second film, I highly recommend all of Chloe Zhao's movies.
Yes, yes, yes.
No, she's incredible. But like, I programmed Lynn Shelton's first film at Slam Dance.
That's great.
And no, the number of first films, like, we had Christopher Nolan's first film.
Yeah. Oh, what a feeling.
The Russo brothers. Like, the amount of people that came through Slam Dance. Drake Doremus. It's been a while since I had to recant the Slam Dance. I've been at Sundance.
No,
yeah, I've been at Sundance the last 5 years. I was at LA Film Fest for 10 years as senior programmer. And then I also currently program Gina Davis's Bentonville Film Festival.
Nice.
And the other concentration there is sort of, it's our mission. And it's a mission that also sort of threaded through my work at LA Film Fest and at Sundance, of course, which is underrepresented voices. And so that's in front of and behind the camera and looking for films that are made by and featuring people who are female, people of color, queer stories, people with disabilities, like all sorts of just the looking out for those voices that might need a little more championing.
Champignon. French word for mushroom.
Yes. Yes. You know they're the right. Yes.
Uh-huh. Is there when you were a teen? Was there you mentioned that you enjoyed stuff that you knew. You know, your friend there that you had an avenue that you went down that maybe wasn't something that you, and I agree with you, like the difference between having a chat room or just any kind of group chat that allows you to connect with those people all over the place would just be a wildly different experience.
Yes.
It just would be. I mean, that's a game changer. Did you have friends that you would kind of nerd out with stuff like that, but it just wouldn't extend into certain areas? Or were you kind of the film nerd and it was like, well, we're just gonna go see this movie, but you know, if Drea comes, like, no. You know, she's gonna be like, we need to talk about why this was a terrible movie. Or what, you know, did you have friends that were hot, because I was for sure hot on talking about movies, yeah, I'd seen and what was special about them, not necessarily from a technical aspect, although I wish I would have been like,
oh yeah,
and that one single shot,
did you see
in, yeah,
oh, the mise-en-scene,
the mise-en-scene.
So I was very, I went to a huge high school. There were like 650 people in my class. And I like that I've explained the population, this class size,
everything
at both Madison and White Bear Lake. I guess. Yeah. I just really want that.
Put
in
it
there.
In a context. But, you're not alone.
Yeah, good. So I had eight best, like there were eight of us. I had seven best friends. We were called the bitches. When we hung out, it was a bitch fest. We have BF this weekend. And of the bitches, one of the best things, and I do think the size of my school was part of this, because we were all, like, other than we were all in choir and in a competitive show choir, or mm-hmm. most of us were, within the bitches, there was a range. Like, we had a couple of them were, like, varsity soccer players. We had a range of backgrounds.
Yeah.
I was theater girl. I was president of our drama club. I was in basically every play from freshman to senior year. I was either in it or I was student director of it. And what I sort of knew, but didn't till I really processed like as a high school or college, was I was a good performer in that I have zero sense of stage fright. I'm good at memorizing lines. I can deliver a couple funny lines. So I basically played every funny old woman ever.
Sure.
Ever. Like, if there was a funny old woman, that's who I played. But my theater friends were separate from, like, my best friends or my choir friends. And my theater friends were the ones who I would talk movies with or stories
mm-hmm.
with. So, like,
mm-hmm.
My freshman year, we did a play of the movie Clue. That somebody transcribed line by line. Like,
amazing.
We did not order that script from Samuel French.
Right, right.
Somebody wrote it out. And so, like, it was that kind of thing of, oh, that was the group that I would, like, bring
yeah.
a weird, like,
yes.
So who's going to talk about the Toxic Avenger with me
right
now? Like,
right.
And so it was kind of, it was this fun thing where I have this tremendously strong, like, best friend group, and then a best friend with that, like, I feel like in high school, best friend groups, like, there were eight of us, and then you could break it down. I'm like, but if it was just the four of us, it'd be me, Mika,
uh-huh.
Jen, and Kari. You know, like, but
yeah.
even outside of that, we all had sort of autonomous interests, and which I still
That's
sort of
really
do.
Cool.
Yeah, I feel I had
I would
a
watch
really,
that movie.
I had a really blessed
or that series
set up. All right, well,
I would watch that series where I could follow, you know, to see the ways in which they came together, but also the ways in which they kind of spoke out, because that seems really healthy to me, right? I mean, it seems like you, knowingly or unknowingly, you guys kind of cracked the code to how to have a healthy best friend club, because it wasn't like every single thing you did together,
yes.
every single moment you were comparing your, you know, just involuntarily, even as an insecure teenager,
you know,
all that stuff, like those things, or feeling like you're being smothered or whatever, like to have still those tendrils going out into different interests and stuff seems like,
well, and that
great.
Is again, it was an accidental thing that we set that up so well,
so cool.
But I still have that. And I still think it's a good way, like both for romantic partnerships, for everything. I think it's a great thing to have, like, a nice hotbed, but, like, one is not everything, you know?
Yes,
so,
yes.
And it was very fun for me. Like, I could never explain, I mean, I could have, but, like, the idea of going to the bitches with the minutiae of drama club or any of the plays that I was in, of, like, ugh, well, you guys won't even understand. This Graham thought he could, like, they didn't even know. Do you know what I mean? Like, much like I don't know what's going on with the soccer team or whatever.
Right.
So, it was, I just was like, that's how I learned how, like, friendships and relationships worked.
Right.
And it worked out. And they also got to be saved from all of my thoughts on, you know, like, Eric Romare or whatever.
And you said you're still in touch with him?
Oh yeah. My best friend is still my best friend.
That's great.
Although Mindy Kaling once said, best friend is a tier, not a position, and that's how I live my life. So I have several best friends.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, from different avenues. But yeah, no, the bitches, we still... I actually, one of the films I produced played the Twin Cities Film Fest, and most of the bitches were able to come out and like...
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was very fun. Great.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
The 2021 pin sale has begun. Thank you so much to everyone who participated in the Max Fun Drive. This is the last year for a while that we'll be doing pins for Max Fun Drive, and the fifth year that we'll be selling pins and donating all proceeds to charity. The past year proved what we already knew, that having access to the internet at home is a necessity for work, school, healthcare, and keeping in touch with family and friends. So the proceeds from this year's pin sale will go towards Everyone On, a nonprofit working to bridge the digital divide. We're grateful that with your support, we'll be able to help low-income folks gain access to affordable computers, internet services, and digital literacy programs. The sale will run until May 28th. Folks at the $10 monthly level and above will have access to all of the pins from the drive. That's 38 pins, one from every show on the network. We also have a special 2021 Max Fun Drive pin that all members can purchase. Go to MaximumFun.org/pinsale for more info. And to learn more about Everyone On and support them directly, you can go to EveryoneOn.org.
I gotta get into this MASH game with you. I can't believe how fast the time has flown.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like we have some pretty good categories that I'm very comfortable introducing into this MASH game. I would definitely love to start with three books that you can jump into and hang out in and be with those characters whenever you want.
Okay. Can I do a Jane Austen?
Yeah, this is for you.
This is mine.
You're not going to prove anything to anybody. Also, Jane Austen's, there's a reason that Jane Austen has lasted this long and is so beloved. She's brilliant.
So it has to be Persuasion.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Do you need any
detailing? I would only pick Sense and Sensibility because it's now inextricably linked to Emma Thompson. And so I can't tease those apart. Now it's all just a lump of golden nuggets of love that I have for both the film adaptation and the book. But Persuasion is wonderful.
Okay,
great. Persuasion, number one. Great. What's number two?
Okay. Number two, I would say A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving.
Great, great, great.
You know what? I'm going to say The Secret Garden.
Do it.
I reread it happily every couple years.
Do it. Did you ever read any Zelpha Keatley Snyder?
No.
Oh, I may have to like send you something.
Currently.
There's a book that's sort of, I've definitely brought it up before, so I won't take, but there's a book that is called The Velvet Room that is almost like a Grapes of Wrathy kind of dust bowl little girl who is given access to this sort of library tower that has these velvet curtains and sort of is in so there's in these books and it's this very lush and it's very Secret Garden in the sense that like that's her secret place. And
you're describing Zelpha my dream Keatley. Book.
I mean, no, it's
or
it's
my
like,
dream room.
It's yeah. It is. It's she wrote really great books, and those are some kind of middle. I guess it's middle grade. I guess it's not fully YA really, because it's still about. It's not really about relationships, but you know, it's not like romance or angst in that way. It's more about loneliness and you know a little bit of like the paranormal. Like, there's another one called The Egypt Game about these kids in this neighborhood who. You know, sort of create this like Egyptian worship that's happening in this backyard of this like guy's old shop, and she has very much captured the like that thrilling feeling you get just finding a little nook anywhere that's your secret place.
Okay.
Like that's it's it. But so the Velvet Room, I think that would be a quick and fun read for a secret garden lover. Anyway, okay, let's move on to next category. Let's do three movies you can jump into. Why not?
Okay. First movie I will say is Amelie.
Yeah. Agreed.
I love it so much. I could rewatch it all the time. It is love and joy and hope with a nod towards loneliness. It's that
magical realism that is so specific and it gives you such a specific feeling. Oh, it's so good.
Next I would say Roman Holiday.
Great.
Gregory Peck and Audrey Hepburn. Love it so much and revisit it, and it's about exploration and finding self, but with romance, and it's beautiful.
Yes, it's so beautiful.
These are some real white ass heteronormative films I'm sending your way. who knew? How would I mix that? Oh, well, this is weirder, but Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh God, I
love
it.
Pan's Labyrinth so much. It's there's creature design and all this, but when you look at sort of the historical backdrop of what it's bringing to life, this family story, the metaphor that these creatures can be, but how they can also exist as this fantastical reality.
I mean, Guillermo del Toro at his best is untouchable.
Yeah.
In such a specific, unique, heartbreaking, like, thank you for letting me inside your brain kind of way. You feel like you don't know how you got in there. You know what I mean? It's a sense of like, I don't know if I should be here, but I don't want to say anything because this is amazing, you know?
Yes. How did I get in your brain? All right.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay. This next one is going to be, it's a little bit lighter fare, but this is sort of an alternate universe, like experiencing the perspective of someone else. So give me three of the bitches, their interests that you sort of get to live for a week. You know what I mean? Or something. You sort of like have their specialty or what have you. Three different ones.
Okay. One, I would say Mika, my best friend. I would say meditation.
Great.
She has done several of these like silent retreats where you don't speak. Yeah. For like 10 days and you meditate. It is so beyond anything I can conceive of. And I very much love that. And
I'm so afraid that something like that would just trigger my mental illness to crank up so far. Anything that's like that much of a difference in my perceived reality, I'd love to evolve to a place where I'm not afraid it's going to make me go crazy forever.
Yeah,
that's a vestigial kind of fear of being in my 20s and like just wanting to feel normal. But also you want to be able to go, well, I've evolved past that and now I can do something. I would like to feel like I could do something like that and never have it enter my mind, or even have it enter my mind, but just face that fear and come out on the other side and go, yeah, I can be alone with my thoughts and I won't go crazy or, you know, be locked up or whatever. I don't know. I love that. Okay, Mika and meditation. Beautiful.
Mika and
what
meditation.
Are your next ones?
Jenny and singing. And that sounds... We're all in choir together. And I am a second alto, which you might sense. Jenny had this beautiful soprano voice and still does. And is one of the people who actually stayed singing and like in choirs and is like...
Nice.
Started writing music like just recent, like in our... Again, forever young and ageless, but
agreed.
Several years outside of when anyone else is. Yeah, she started that later. And I love that. I love that as an expression. It's sort of a bold one, right? Like,
yes.
To ask to me for someone who always sang like the harmony on things of like, please listen to me sing. Seems like a really bold thing.
I love that.
Yeah. And then. Trying to think of like a specific, there were eight bitches, so just narrowing them down. I'm gonna say are we thinking something like that I knew that they were into when we were the bitches?
Not necessarily. I think it could be something that came later.
Okay. So, Kelly has became a distance runner. Like,
oh, nice.
After
yes.
school.
Yes, like, good pick.
Which is something, like, I have terrible knees. I'm a swimmer. I'm never going to be a runner. But yeah. I love that. And I do think a lot of people find running yes. often later. Like, it's yes. something that sort of gets unlocked in your kind of 20s mm-hmm. or 30s or whatever. And mm-hmm. and I love that. I love what goes into that. And it also sounds terrible to me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Both of Agreed. Those things. Yeah.
That's exactly what MASH is for. It normalizes Perfect. And harmonizes all of the things that feel like they're disjointed and discordant about a thing that also appeals to you.
Perfect.
Okay. Next one. My favorite. Three foods that you can have in this reality that are not bad for you. It's not bad for the environment. It's not something you're allergic to. You can clearly tell I have like lots of allergies.
Yep.
My way of like, I would just have all the glue. It's so dumb. Anyway, but yeah, it can be as specific as like this beautiful. And I don't celebrate this often enough, but when I was in France, like maybe 15 years ago, I had this pistachio croissant that had like pistachio paste in it instead of almond paste and little sprinklings of pistachio on top. I don't even care about pistachio, but it really stuck with me. And I thought about it the other day and was like, that's one of those moments where you're like the place and time in Montmartre area. It's super Amelie feeling.
Oh, yeah.
And you're eating something. You're like, I think I'm going to remember this pastry for the rest of my life, but maybe that's not true. And it's like, no, it is true. It is. I was right. I still think about that yeah. fucking pastry.
But also because the pastry you're describing, that seems like the kind of thing it would be almost impossible to replicate that taste
yes,
elsewhere.
It's never been offered to me since.
Yeah.
Even going back to France, I've never like glanced down and been like, oh, the pistachio version of like an almond croissant, which is very common.
Yeah.
So it could be that. It could be okay. really specific, or it could just be, you know, steak. It's totally
okay.
up to you.
I'm going to say, based on the idea of what excitement I felt over you telling me that this was going to be free of allergies or any concerns.
Yes, indeed.
I'm going a cheese route first because
Good one.
The
yes.
older I get, the more yes. lactose unhappy I become.
Yes,
and
indeed.
I love cheese and I love a very sharp, dry, yes. like yes. a cheddar that almost has like crystals in it. It's so sharp.
Yeah.
Like
your mouth makes its own water.
Yes.
It doesn't even make you thirsty because you're like,
yes.
oh, I'm clearly providing all the moisture my mouth
yes.
needs because of the way this cheese
yes.
exists.
And I can have as
Great.
Much of it as I want
yes,
without
indeed.
Worry. Good, good.
1,000%.
Okay, so I would do that. I would do, also slightly cheese related, but like just nachos with
nachos with
like guac. And sour cream and pico de gallo.
Like, all of those things, some version of that, those things I eat on such a regular basis.
Oh, yeah.
And yet I never allow them to be nachos.
Right.
I never like, but also sometimes, Janet, just eat the fucking nachos. Why am I cursing all of a sudden?
Only
about food. I only started dropping F-bombs when we were talking about food, which is hilarious. But you know what I mean? It's like, I'll
yes.
have some chips. I'll have some cheese. I eat a lot of Mexican food. Just have a pile of nachos. Just
yeah.
do it once in a while, Janet.
Also,
come on.
They're not even that. They can be not terrible. Do you know what I mean?
Of course, because the only thing you're talking about really is the chips.
Yeah.
If you're putting a bunch of other stuff on it, that's just, it's like, it's not.
Yeah.
I love it. Nachos. Agreed
nachos,
and good reminder to me.
Gooey cheese, all the stuff.
Yeah.
Just so yummy. And then, you know, I'm just going to like ride this lactose train. I love ice cream so much.
Yeah.
And I miss, and I like a full fat, just a whole ridiculous, like a cookies and cream, but also
mm-hmm.
as hot fudge on it.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm,
that's what I'm looking for. That right now I look at it and would be like, okay, I can have, I can have three bites of you if I'm in mixed
right.
company. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. Okay, next one. It's our MASH universe. We got to have some sort of romantic partner that can mean whatever you want it to mean. It could be a brief fling. It could be long-time asexual companionship. It could be, it could almost be like the beer thing. Like, I wish I wanted this kind of relationship, but I don't. But for this, I'll do it. Or it could be like, this person's very bad for me, but I can handle it.
So wait,
fine.
are we naming people?
This
or
is like, it could be like characters. Again, characters from books. Character. Yeah, I really spent too much time characterizing what the relationship could look like. For some reason, I've been feeling very like, I don't want people to feel like I'm saying like, and you'll be married, because love takes so many different shapes.
No, that's
and
fair.
So lust.
Yeah, I'm not interested in marriage, but I am interested in fictional relationships. So this is
great.
Perfect for me.
Great.
Okay. So I'm going to time travel and I'm going to claim Gregory Peck, whom we've already discussed.
What a dream.
Like specifically Gregory Peck in To Kill a Mockingbird. When he played Atticus Finch.
Yes.
I would like to spend a lot of time with that person.
Yes.
I am going to say, did you ever see or read the number one ladies detective agency?
I didn't read it. I did see it. I did watch it.
It's a fantastic show. Yes. I've watched it several times, and every time it finishes, I'm bummed out that it's
you know what? I
got
this on my
to-do
list because I watched it like when it was on, and it's been a minute.
No, revisit it. And it's so good and buoyant and happy. It is great escapism.
Great.
But I would say Jill Scott's character in that.
Jill Scott.
Madame Ramotse, her name is it Precious? I think her character's name is, no, this is going to kill me.
Understood.
Yeah, Precious Ramotse. I would like to spend so much time with her.
Remember when Jill Scott appeared and everyone was like, what heavenly spaceship
Jill
did you
Scott,
just get off of?
She's so stunning, so delicious. She also, if you haven't seen the Chappelle Block Party that Michel Gondry directed. It's a if you want to feel like this weekend, like, oh yeah, I want to be at a block party outside, listen to music with all these people, that movie can get you pretty close, because the it's like the Roots. It's Erykah Badu. It's Dead
awesome.
Prez. It's so so great. But Jill Scott comes out and she's like the rookie in all of it, right? Like, there's all these big hard hitters. And she comes out and she is so confident and so stunning. And they're interviewing her, and Michel Gondry, the director, has asked her something behind the camera, like, you know, are you intimidated at all or whatever? And she literally just looks at the camera and is like, so you've not heard me sing. It is so amazing. And then they cut to her singing and you're like, oh, I see angels. Like, it's so good. It's so good.
For her.
Oh yeah, I'm kind of in love with her. So let's see. And then third, man, there's just so many. How does one winnow it down? Okay, so this is inspired by a recent viewing of a movie. It's an unusual path for me. Burt Reynolds.
I'm excited. Okay, all right, I like it.
Burt Reynolds.
What was the movie that brought that up for
it's
you?
It's not a good movie. It's called Malone, and I watched it for Max Fun Drive. Bonus content, I did an episode of Jordan Jesse Go.
Nice.
And it is a Burt Reynolds movie from like 1987 or something, or 1983. But rewatching it, man, there's something in real life, like, I'm hit or miss with dudes that are super testosterone-y, super aggro, super, like, cock of the walk, right?
Yeah.
But I'm also convinced that I can just, like, shepherd that as I need to, because I'm also pretty arrogant. So there was something about, like, unleash, because, like, Gregory Peck to me has, like, some of the beautiful sort of, like, cerebral sensitivity that I generally go for. Like, I like a sensitive intellectual person.
Yes.
Same with Precious Ramwatse.
Yes.
Burt Reynolds? No. It's just right? Like, it's just like this sexual, like, so yeah, that's what I'm going to
That's a great
And I'm
choice.
Not picking a character. Variety. The other two I have like yeah, characters
but this
of
is
theirs.
Burt Reynolds. Got
this
it.
This is Burt Reynolds. Yeah.
Totally
yeah.
get it. Understood.
Okay.
Next category, let's do three conversations with a filmmaker, living or dead, that you would love to have. Just like it's just like you two on a like across couches from each other with just drinks and snacks, and like they want to be with you as long as you want to be with them, and just talk about their work or whatever.
Yes,
you can pick
okay.
their brain.
So the first one I would say would be Chantal Ackerman, who is a French, she was a Belgian director, but a lot of her work was in French. She is probably most known for Jean Delmont 23, Quai du Commerce. It's just Jean Delmont is mostly okay. how people know it. It's a beautiful 4-hour film about this woman going through her daily routine in Paris. And I watched it again recently, and she's almost never leaves her apartment. I found a lot to connect to. But Chantal Ackerman was she was near the French New Wave, but was also a director that was centering on women's stories
mm-hmm.
with a women's perspective as a female director.
Yes, indeed. What,
early on.
Yeah.
And,
I gotta check it out.
Yeah, and I think the work she does is so... Like, it's that idea of giving credit to a lot of the tasks that fall to women and mm-hmm. that are therefore, like, not considered tasks. It's the idea of, like, how people who are, caregivers for their family or
yes.
homemakers that yes. it's not considered a job when in reality right. there's more work done there
Absolutely.
Than almost anywhere. And Chantel's films was sort of acknowledging that and building worldviews.
Lovely.
I would then say Ida Lupino, who great. Was an incredible... She was also an actress. I'm trying to find the years yeah. that she was...
I mean,
working.
Talk about ahead of the game. Like,
yes.
was any woman out? I mean, you would know. I wouldn't, but it feels like I don't hear a lot of other female names being tossed around in the era in which she was
yeah.
directing.
It's she was directing in the 1950s, which is yeah. also when she was performing a lot. But like Alice Begee was directing before then. There were more women actually in the mix then. It's
yeah.
just that because of like lackluster archiving. So many of those films have been lost to history.
Right.
Ida was more like recognizable now because she was also an actress. And so
right.
She was in other people's works and was more famous that way. But like truly was sort of like doing it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which anyway, I think you should look at her stuff. She's she was the first woman to direct a film noir. She made a film called The Hitchhiker. And like.
Oh, wow.
The difference, if you're looking at like how the oh good sirens, if you're looking
oh, yeah,
at
no,
how
listen, I get it. I'm surprised I haven't had 8 helicopters.
I was gonna
yet
say normally
today.
It's more of a helicopter uh-huh. vibe around me. For her, it's the idea of introducing the women's perspective into the filmmaking again of like
yeah.
an established genre like noir.
Yes,
you have that in there, and suddenly a film fatale. Or a femme fatale can take on totally different meaning because of
yeah.
how women perceive women. So
okay, I'm putting the Hitchhiker on. Seems like
and then, God, time and space. Like there's so many.
Yep.
I would say, like, who's around now that I would want to spend time with? Ugh. I'm literally looking at a list. I'm like, man, there's some garbage people on this list, huh? A lot of not great people on the old, oh my gosh. Yeah. yeah, I know who. I'd say Billy Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
I think Billy Wilder is, he's made more movies that like I've enjoyed or made me laugh or made me think. Like
mm-hmm.
he did, speaking of noir, like Double Indemnity, but like
yeah.
The Lost Weekend. But he also did Sunset Boulevard, Some Like It Hot. He made The Apartment, which is one of my all-time favorites. Like,
absolutely
I think,
amazing.
Yeah, he's an incredible director and had like such a handle for both comedy and
yeah.
drama. Oh, yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, okay.
Great, okay. Second to last category, let's do three real places in the world that if we could just teleport you there, that you would like to have a second home. Doesn't have to be a vacation home.
It
could be
that.
Like a working busy home, or it could be just nothing but lying around and having, you know, whatever vacation looks like for you.
Yes. Okay. There's an island in Greece called Paros.
Yeah, okay.
And I would want that. My friend June, Mika's younger brother. You know about Mika.
I do.
My friend June Pierre is an artist and like taught there for years and got married there a couple years ago. So I got to go there. Nice. And it was one of the most beautiful places I've ever been.
Oh, great.
Ever. Paros. And it's also really hard to get to. And that sounds awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I would say... Some sort of remote mountain camp. All of these, this is ironic that I'm like, I've been alone for so long. And most
know,
of these places I'm like, what's hard to get to that I don't
I
have to
it.
See people? Yeah.
I really get it though.
Right? But I would like the mountain, the weird sort of haberdashery that they go to in The Hateful Eight.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But minus all of them and
right.
snow.
Right.
I want
right.
to be there when it's warm.
Yeah.
But that's
yeah.
where I would like to be. In all
right.
of those mountains nestled in.
Yes.
But like by myself and without killers around me.
Great.
If I could.
That's a fair ask.
If I could. And
great.
Then I would very much like to take over wherever the house, I feel like it was in Majorca, where they filmed season one of Love Island UK.
Okay.
I would like to be at that house. It has this gigantic pool.
Great.
And I would like to be in that pool and in that house.
Great. Okay, great. Final category, let us do... I mean, do you want to do a little time travel? You want to do a little, like, see a thing that you could never see with your real eyes
if
you were
right.
in a safety bubble? It could be that you actually get to solve a mystery that, you know, we don't know the answer to. Like, you're
yes.
like, no, guys, I saw
I
it.
Know exactly
I
which
know.
Mystery I would want to solve.
Okay. So three places in time you can go for, you know, it's for as little or as long as you like. And you are in this sort of safety bubble.
Okay, good. Okay. First one, I want to go to, in real life, Agatha Christie disappeared for 11
right.
days.
Where was
and
she?
There's like a bunch of theories of where she was.
Yeah.
But there is, it's never been truly 100% like, oh, this is where she went. I want to go to where
yeah.
Agatha Christie
yeah.
was for her missing 11 days.
Yes.
That's
sounds- didn't wasn't there a movie that I saw with Vanessa Redgrave was who played like wasn't there one that was about that? Like,
yeah, I'm sure
of,
there's been a couple.
I,
like there was
is,
a
yeah.
there was a Doctor Who about it. Like,
yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, and it was a great episode. But yeah, so that one,
great.
The Doctor Who one, of course, involved like gigantic wasp alien creatures.
As you do.
Yes, my version hopefully will not have those wasps. My next thing, my grandpa, as I mentioned, was a Marine during World War II. And at one point, there was something. He was on an island off Japan and had been separated and basically was followed by a sniper for like
Whoa.
4 days. And then like reconnected with his platoon or whatever.
Wow.
And I would like to, because he made it out. So I would like to.
Yeah, yeah.
Watch that. Like,
yeah.
He wrote about it once, but he was not a writer. He never wanted to speak about it. He typed out all the details that he could remember once, but it didn't have like a lot of flourish. It was like,
yes,
the first night. But anyway, so I'd be
yeah.
very interested
oh, that's
to see
great,
that.
Great, great choice. How amazing.
And then I feel like I'd kind of like to be. When my parents got back together again,
yeah.
like, because they got back together in college after my sister's story that I had mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And going through this whole thing. And my dad is a wonderful but very Midwestern man and
mm-hmm.
like a very sort of emotionally like, oh, get a big fish hook to get this out.
Uh-huh.
And there's something about I would love to see. None of the gross stuff. I mean,
right.
they're my parents. I'd like
but
the,
just how they navigate.
I'd like the PG-13 version
and, yeah.
of them coming
yeah.
back together. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Okay. All right. Give me an adjective that is maybe an adjective that is like a quality that you, one of the qualities that you really look for or you find yourself returning to with favorite films. An adjective that sort of describes one of the qualities, I'm getting really esoteric, but one of the qualities of film that you look for.
Okay. Immersive.
Great. That's all I need. I'm going to start this process so I can tell you which of these, which one of these we are going to build into this MASH world. If you wouldn't mind telling people everything they need to know about you, your podcast, anything else people should be paying attention to that you want them to be paying attention to and supporting.
Okay. I feel like people already know probably too much about me. So thank you for listening and dealing with how I have no filters. And thank you for my family for dealing with that as well. So I co-host a Maximum Fun podcast called the Untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonso Project. We are recently in the process of changing our name, and we'll actually have our new name out, I think, in the next week or two. So maybe around this time. But it's a movie podcast that I do that's discussing movies through the filter that's not just straight white guys. And we each have our own perspectives and backgrounds that we bring to it, but it's very fun and I love those fellas and I love having that. Yeah, Janet was a wonderful guest of ours. And I've already complimented her for walking to Max Fun to do our taping because it's stuck in my head ever since.
I'm a freak.
Yeah. No, you're wonderful. And I also, I co-host another podcast called Ticklish Business, which is deconstructing Hollywood cinema with, from sort of a feminist viewpoint, and that I do with a few other women. And then in real life, I am a indie producer and I program festivals, and that means sort of picking the movies that show at different film festivals and hopefully helping.
That's important. I mean, that's important work. And you know what I mean? That's just very, very cool, very important work. That's setting legacies. It's setting legacies.
It
should not be undersold. Yeah. That's really, really important and really wonderful stuff.
It's gatekeeping. And I take it very seriously. I hold it in my heart what people entrust us with that. So, yeah.
I love that. I love that as much as I hope you love.
I can't wait.
These things that I'm about to reveal to you. First of all, I want to congratulate you on, this is really working for me. All of these things are really working for me. Like, there feels something, feels like a theme.
Cohesive?
I mean, it does kind of feel cohesive, even though it's wildly disparate. I don't know.
Oh, good, good.
But, okay. So first of all, I want to congratulate you for your mountain cabin, sans snow and killers. Tuck in there. It is a house, so it's not a shack cabin. It's certainly not an apartment cabin. It's not a mansion cabin. Of course you got a house. It's a perfectly right size for where it is and what you want. Right there, tucked into the mountains. I'm just going to say this right now.
All right.
Which is that of all of the people you want to be in that cabin with, I think we both know that To Kill a Mockingbird, Gregory Peck is the one.
Atticus Finch, yes!
So that's just lovely right there. I don't know why. I mean, I guess I do know in the sense that maybe you can take him with you because I feel like he would also have an appreciation for the magic of Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which you can also go into to have this totally different, speaking of immersive, just incredibly immersive experience. You can also go into and just jump inside the pages of A Prayer for Owen Meany and be in that world with those characters. I mean, this is some real world building that's been going on.
Really?
You picked great, great, great stuff. I would say if you'd gotten Amelie, same kind of thing. But just in terms of the breadth of the feeling of being in this other world.
Well, both Pan's Labyrinth and A Prayer for Owen Meany are stories that cycle around wars.
Yes,
and I feel like Atticus Finch could give me a real, could unlock, there's sort of a contextual element there that
I agree
that an attorney could kind of bring to that.
I agree. There's a real thoughtfulness, mm-hmm. and there's a thoughtfulness and a need for reflective stillness mm-hmm. that comes from those experiences that you take with you to the mountain cabin. Yes. Do you know
what
I mean?
We'll be in the right location for that.
And mm-hmm. let me tell you how that also ties in so nicely with being a distant runner, like a distance runner, where you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's a sense of motion, but
yes.
stillness.
Yes.
There's a sense of travel, but being in your body, very
yes.
in your body. So that feels great to me. Also, it's just a lot of activity, and you're going to need a lot of ice cream. There's just no doubt about it. You're going to need to just dig into that ice cream and just like, it's going to be fabulous. Works in any of those contexts. You also get a chance to have as long of a conversation as you want with Billy Wilder.
Oh my gosh, I'm so
kind
excited.
Of a big deal. And you also get to see the PG-13 or even just PG version of seeing your parents kind of coming back to each other.
I mean, this is a dream,
Janet. Doesn't it feel cohesive? It just feels,
yes.
it kind of, they all sort of put together feel, they give you a very specific feeling that I really like.
Yes. Oh, I will ruminate on all of this.
Great.
I enjoy that a lot. Thank you.
I've been looking so forward to this. I'm so glad that you did the podcast. Thank you so much. I have now this robust list of stuff that I can either return to or watch for the first time or read for the first time. I cannot wait. I kid you not, I'm instantly downloading the audiobook.
Oh, good.
The Other Bennett Sister.
Oh, I hope you love it.
I'm so positive that I will, and not in a way that like means that I'm going to have my expectations too high. I just know I am. So I'm very sure of it. I'm basically as sure about that as you were about the sailing trip and like
okay,
where to drop anchor based
yes.
on a piece of paper. It's just not going to be a problem.
I love that you just said that. And I want you to know, thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this and to talking to you. And I know that because as someone who listens to this, you're just a very good listener, but normally very good listeners are not also very good talkers. And you really do both really, really well. So,
oh, gosh. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'd be in so much trouble if I did one. I mean, listen, and I'm sure there are people who feel I don't do one of the two well or neither of the two well. But if it would be that's I really appreciate that. That just
yeah.
means the world to me. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
If you are listening to this and you feel like you missed Max Fun Drive because it was just a few days ago, I want you to rest assured that you can always become a Max Fun member. And if you are in a position where you can't stand the fact that you may not get some tea or a pin, I feel like I could hook you up. I'm just saying I feel like I could hook you up. So don't let that stop you from joining the fam. It's a wonderful group of people. And everyone listening, I hope you are feeling well, sane, and I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees. Maybe we should move someplace new and build time machines to go and get us back.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.